meeting is being recorded.
Which I am expecting could be this late. They're sitting in our county commission meeting right now, and it's running behind schedule. We've been keeping me apprised of that. And then I'm also expecting Tony Kennedy, are we not?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. We'll see how much you're in a minute. So we have with us today in terms of staff, Victoria, do you mind making introductions?
Sure. We have CEO Angela Padalecki, Director of Operations Dylan Heberlein, Director of Finance and Administration Sarah Mingy, myself, Victoria Hightower, HR Manager, Terminal Ops Manager Cameron Reese, Finance Manager Jennifer Croker in the corner back there, and then Director of Facilities Ben Peck. I'm missing one online.
Thank you for all of our guests for being here today. Let's start our meeting off with a Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have, I need a motion to approve the agenda stands.
So moved.
Second.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. Do we have any commissioner comments today? I have one as we close out the year. I want to thank all of you for your commitment to the airport. An engaged board as a volunteer chair is a really, really big deal. And you all have been engaged and phenomenal commissioners. And I'm grateful for your volunteer work this past year. And then in that spirit, Mayor Kennedy and I had the opportunity to put together an opinion editorial that the Daily Sentinel kindly ran this last Saturday, just listing some great facts about the airport. It's been an incredible year. 2025 was a record-breaking year on so many fronts. And so we just wanted to share with the community that positive news. Often it just doesn't get out of where we sit around this table. And it's a lot of important things. And when the airport wins, we all win as a community. So I'm going to share that with you all. Any other comments today?
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure, absolutely. All right, do we have any citizen comments today?
I did not receive any, no.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. I was just talking about our opinion editorial, so thank you for collaborating on that.
Beth.
We're so glad you're here. So it does not look like there are any citizen comments today, so then we have the consent agenda to approve if there are no changes to the consent agenda.
Madam Chair, can we take item B into consideration, please?
And pull that out? Yeah. Anything else? Okay. I need a motion to approve the consent agenda with item B pulled out.
So moved.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Wonderful. The motion carries. So because we pulled B out, I think it's appropriate just to dive right into B right now, which is the Chief Executive Employment Agreement. Commissioner Hyman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to thank the Executive Committee and Dan for providing some suggestions in the agreement. I have a few motions to clarify my intent. And if I have the courtesy to second all these motions, I'll be happy to explain them. The first motion that I have is make a motion to change section for subsection D of the employment agreement from board shall consider a further increase to board shall reconsider the increase.
B, that was what? D?
Yes, section 4D. The language after the steps.
I'm not sure much. Can I get a second for that motion?
I'll second.
Commissioner West, any discussion?
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you for the second. Language here, my interest here is that if there are members of the board that are not comfortable with the contract or the agreed to increases, then they can request the chair put it on the agenda for further consideration. And the way it's currently written, it can only be considered for an increase. And my concern is that if there are some board members that would like to see it go the other way, that the only alternative to, and there's not really an alternative to the increase. So it just gives the board a little more flexibility. Appreciate any questions or comments on that.
Questions or comments? Does that sound straightforward enough? All right, I'm going to call the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Commissioner Penner, did you have another?
I did. Thank you very much, Chair. In in the section 4, subsection D, when we discuss the bonuses, I would actually like to insert a similar paragraph as got inserted in the step paragraph along the lines of provided, however, the authority board shall reconsider a bonus to the employees or reconsider a change to the employees' bonus if two or more board members request an amendment to the salary set forth herein no less than 30 days prior to the end of the calendar year.
This is in subsection E regarding the 20% base.
That's correct.
Can I get a second on that? Okay, any questions or comments?
Thank you. So my thinking here is that the way the current section is written, it allows, gives the chair authority to award the bonus solely in their sole discretion. And I'm just not comfortable abdicating my responsibilities or authority in this case. And so I feel that two or more board members, because they can put on an agenda, that it should be put on the agenda and discussed.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other discussion, questions? Okay, I'll call the vote on that one. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you.
Get all that captured.
It is being recorded. Okay. And then Victoria and Dan, I would ask, did you hear those clearly?
I may need a little bit of help, but I think I understood what Lee was offering right there. So we can confirm the word choice and go back and listen, but I think I got it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, good sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So with those two amendments, we have the ability to move forward and call the vote with a nomination on the Chief Executive Officer Employment Agreement. May I get a
motion?
Thank you, Commissioner West, and a second.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheer. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all for your work on that. That was a lot of work, and I'm grateful that we could do that on behalf of our CEO and a phenomenal year and a phenomenal leader here at the helm. All right, then we move into today our action items. 11:45, it looks like we have our air show presentation. Is Clay exactly joining us today?
Clay's joining us remotely.
Hi, Clay.
And I don't know, I think maybe... Oh, go ahead.
Wonderful. I'll just give a little background, if that's okay, Clay. So Clay is the former commissioner here, former vice chair on our airport board, and just stepped off finance and audit. He served on that for many years. We're grateful for his volunteer work. And if I'm not mistaken, are you also chair of the air show? Is that correct?
Yes, currently.
Okay. And how many years have we had the air show in Grand Junction?
Not prepared for that question.
Wing it.
You know, it started back in the 50s from my recollection, so there's been numerous air shows, and, you know, usually every 2 to 4 years, so there's been numerous air shows. I've been a part of probably 5 or 6 of them over the last 15-ish years.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for bringing this to our attention. We're excited to have it back in 2026, so take it away.
Great, thank you. Thanks. Good morning to everyone there. And thank you for taking the time to listen. I noticed I have my CASA volunteer thing up, so I don't want that to confuse anyone. I have done some volunteering with CASA as well, so I'm excited about that today. We, as most of you probably know, the U.S. Navy Blue Angel Jet Team will be our feature attraction October 3rd and 4th of this coming year. I'll just give a little timeline so you have some understanding and then leave some time for questions and make it quick, so I know you all have a lot to do. We'll begin preparing the area in front of West Star Thursday prior to the show. West Radiation is critical to this happening, as also is the airport. But without Westar, their support, the access to their ramp, this wouldn't be possible, and also very good sponsorship from them as well. The Blue Angels, this will be what they call a long show, so they'll be coming off another event, and they will show up in Grand Junction on a Sunday prior to our show, so they'll have the jets parked. They'll stand down, their whole team, approximately 120, are part of the Blue Angel team. They'll stand down till Wednesday, and then they'll go back into their operating mode and do all the different things they do, visit hospitals, visit some schools, and then begin practices on Thursday. We'll also have the F-16 Viper demo team. We did have them last time as well. They put on a great performance, and we're excited to have them. Static displays, we don't really start securing those until about 3 to 4 months prior to the show. So those are still a little undetermined, but we'll have a good mix of aircraft, civilian as well as military. One big change this year that we're going to introduce is busing everyone to the show. We've just found that the challenges that we create, not only for the airport, but for ourselves, are just too large. So we've got a transportation consultant that specializes in air show, air shows that we will work with, and a busing expert as well that we're contracting with. So they will help us from various parking lots across the community to the show, and there'll be very limited parking available at the air show. We're going to partner with and are partnering with the Grand Junction Sports Commission, Ben Snyder, for a lot of the operational pieces of the show. We've done a lot of volunteer work in the past, and we're finding that that's becoming more and more difficult. So a good portion of our operations will be helped out by Ben and his team, and we're excited to work with them. Ben will be a major point of contact. And then on the air side, Mark Papko, previously from the airport here, is our air show kind of director for the air operations. He will be the contact on that side and work with the airport and Dylan and his team greatly throughout the next few months as we put this on. The show times run normally from 11 or 12 to 4 p.m. As the Blue Angels finish, that's when we shut the show down and send everybody home. Gates open around 9, and that allows everyone to come in, see the vendors, look at the static, and just start to kind of understand what's going to be going on throughout the day. Really, with that, I'll kind of open it up to questions. Those are the basics of what we'll have going on. We also have civilian acts and different things like that that'll be coming to help keep the crowd entertained. But those are the basics. So, Lindy, if there's questions, I'm happy to answer some of those.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there questions, commissioners?
I have a quick one. I'm excited to hear logistically kind of the planning that's being done around moving people in and out, working with places to park and busing them up here. Are we doing anything in the way of kind of the publicity around that to where people know that they can get here without fighting the traffic on Horizon Drive and in the proximity of the airport? It just seems like it would make it maybe more people might be inclined to attend the air show if they knew they didn't have to fight the driving part.
In terms of communication.
Yeah,
we'll definitely be doing our best to get that out even before ticket sales start, which we believe will start the middle to the end of January. We'll try to make it very clear that the only access will be through busing so that folks don't come down. Obviously, that's going to be a challenge. We're going to have people that still think they should be able to park. We do a lot of work to put out no parking signs along H Road and everywhere else. So it's going to be a challenge to get that communicated, but that is our goal, is to get that information out, make sure everybody understands it. I think it will be a challenge for some folks who have historically been able to come in and park and walk to the show, but I think for most everyone, it will be a better event and hopefully something that works out well and keeps the traffic flowing to the airport as well, because we have a lot of challenges with people walking across different roads and have had to deal with that in the past too. So yeah, we're going to do our best here to communicate that. We'll make sure that Dylan's involved and whoever else would like to be involved in all of that planning and in those meetings with us.
Do you have a contact within the city of Grand Junction Police Department? I would assume you probably do, but and if so, I guess it's more on the city side, but it'd be important. I think the city could play an important role in kind of pushing that out through our communications department as far as people's expectations of access, where they can park, and that kind of thing.
We have the chief. He'll be part of our many of our meetings, and he's kind of an honorary board member. So we'll have the chief, sheriff, we'll have all of their designees that are involved in helping with safety and security. So we're also going to use Trent Prawl has agreed to help us with some of the engineering piece, and so we've got connections with all of those different groups, and they'll be heavily involved.
Perfect. Thanks, Cliff.
Yeah. And as we think about the communications, I'm sure the airport and even our friends at the Daily Sentinel can help us with that message, too, to get out to the community. But I'm thrilled to hear that you guys are working on that buses piece, because transportation has been so tricky in years past, and such congestion all the way from the airport even down to, you know, 7th Street. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you bet.
I want to thank you for bringing the show to Grand Junction. This airport, we're always trying to build critical mass just to be recognized for what we provide for this community, and this event really helps with that. I also have a couple just quick tactical questions. Where is the remote parking? How much attendance do you expect? And what is the admission cost?
We're still finalizing a few of those things. Normally in the past, we've used the high school parking lots. This time of year, Canyon View probably won't be available, so we're still trying to identify a lot of those parking areas, and they'll be wherever we can make that the most appropriate. Cost, you know, we try to keep that pretty minimal. We do some sponsorships and VIP tents. Those settle out. We're already sold out on those. General admission will be somewhere between $20 and $25 for adults. We've had kids, I think they were 10 bucks or free. I'm not sure what we'll do on that. It won't be much for kids if we have those. I'd like to keep it free if possible. As you can imagine, there's a lot of expenses that come with this kind of an event, and jet fuel and everything else that comes with it. So we do need to meet some of those costs, but we definitely try to keep it cost effective on the general admission side. Did I miss any of those?
What is your anticipated attendance?
You know, paid ticket attendance is somewhere between 10 and 15,000 per day. With volunteers and all of the other groups on site, it's, you know, substantially above that, but we're somewhere around that.
Thank you, sure.
Clay, did you say all the VIP tents are sold?
We can always try to make more room, but yeah. they carry over pretty well from the last show, and we're somewhat limited on the tarmac today with just the space that we can put on without getting into dirt or doing something that doesn't make any sense. So for the most part, sold out. We hold back a little bit if we need to every now and then, and if we can come up with enough tents and space that we can do more, we squeeze people in together. But pretty well sold, yeah.
Okay. Hey, Clay from
but anybody that's a prior sponsor will still be getting with those folks, and they have first shot at it. So anybody that's been a sponsor in the past is kind of in that group.
Okay, thank you. Clay, will the move from a volunteer base to using the sports commission, I assume that's an increase in cost. Will that influence ticket prices?
No, I don't think so. We've managed over the past few shows to get ourselves to a situation where we have what we think we need to make it work this way. And so there's still going to be a lot of volunteers needed. The Sports Commission will help with a lot of the fact that we have no paid people. So that way we get somebody to kind of hold down the fort, use their staff as best we can. They'll be compensated through that, and we're happy to help make sure that they get a good income out of it. But we'll still have quite a few volunteers. You know, the challenge there is going to be getting them bused as well, and get people early enough to the show that they can volunteer. So we have some logistics to work out still, but we don't really see another option at this point other than the busing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the partnerships just feel so wise and strategic. So Ben Snyder, what a great addition to have the Sports Commission. Just a couple of things I've heard over the past years. The queuing to get in ingress, maybe perhaps some shade while they wait in water, just because even though it's October, you know, Grand Junction still sweltering hot, and then ample water and shade in the interior as well. And that's something a certain bank can help with.
I think the busing will help with that as well, in that they'll at least be out of it, you know, if they're in a queuing line for the buses. Hopefully that's something that moves quicker than folks having to walk all the way from long distances. But yeah, we try to be as cognizant as we can with those different items, and so we'll definitely make it through that and try to continue to make that better each time we can.
Thanks, Clay. It's moving a lot of people on short time, so it's hard, I know. Any other questions or comments from commissioners? Well, we're thrilled you're coming back, so thank you for all your work. I know this is a volunteer role, and we just appreciate having you on our show here. It's a really fun thing.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate all of you. Obviously, it could not be done without you all, and we'll continue to keep you informed to make sure that Angela and Dylan are in on everything they can be and help us make the best show we can. So we appreciate all of you.
Right on. Thank you, Clay. And a shout out to Cameron too. I think
thank you.
He serves on that volunteer board.
Oh yeah, I was gonna mention that Cameron's on our board. He's always on modern DW, so I didn't know if he was around or what he's doing. Thank you, Cameron. We very much appreciate you. Oh, and I also wanted to mention Ben and Dylan came out for the ICAPS convention and sat through a day and a half of discussion about how they run the air shows in other places, and so very much appreciate that as well, and their involvement and the Air Force willingness to send them to understand how this thing works even better. So we appreciate all that as well. I had a couple more notes on the second page that I didn't get to. So
thank you. So many questions. Angela, do you have anything you want to add or Dylan or
Clay, thanks so much for the summary and all the work you put into this. I mean, the airport obviously gets a tremendous amount of credit for the air show, and so grateful for the volunteers behind the air show. Also grateful for their partnership as we really kind of take the air show into kind of the next phase of air shows, because the air show's gotten so big that we're just really excited to have some paid employees involved. Thanks, Clay, so that none of us feel bad when, you know, there's work involved, and wanted to also recognize Dylan and Ben and Cameron because they're very involved. But the air show is so fun. Has everyone on the board been to an airport air show? I mean, it's so fun. There's so much energy, and the kids in particular love it. And this board's really focused on the kids, which I just absolutely love. I mean, it's a way for everyone to communicate after the airport, so it's a great time to highlight it. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. So thanks so much, Clay, for making time and for working with us on an agreement so it's really clear roles, responsibilities, expectations. It just makes things go more smoothly.
Absolutely. Thank you, Angela. We appreciate your support as well. One, I should mention also, St. Mary's Hospital is signed on as a major sponsor as well. So we are bringing in a pink jet. It's flown by two ladies that also get out and talk about cancer and cancer prevention. So we haven't mentioned that to St. Mary's yet, that we got the pink jet, but that'll be a neat addition for them and their sponsorship. So they've been great as well. And then, of course, all the other sponsors, there's too many to mention, but those are our two largest currently. So, but thank you to the airport for all your support. Thank you, Angela.
Thanks, Clay, for carving out time to join us and share with us the exciting news and ticket sales go on sale in January, so we get a headline. Thanks, Clay. May I have a motion for action item A?
Sure, Madam Chair. I move to approve the special events access permit between the GJRAA and the Grand Junction Air Show Incorporated for the limited purpose of operating a multi-day air show at the airport.
Checking that.
Thank you, Commissioner Shear. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And motion carries. All right, we now have action item B, resolution 2025-08, establishing our rates and charges. Thank you for the red line version. That's so incredibly helpful as we look through that, so I appreciate that. Would you like to present on this, Sarah?
Sure. So for the rates and charges, we have pretty minimal changes this year in what's been presented here for this round. The primary one being the updates to the airline terminal terminal rent rate and the landing fee for commercial aircraft. Those are really calculated in accordance with our airline use and lease agreement, but it is published in this way because that way if we have someone who's not operating here, it is a published and stated rate. So that's kind of what the rates and charges is, to clarify for any of those in the public as far as parking rates and those types of things. Outside of the airline changes, the other increases that we had, we did do some increases for our AOA badge fees. Those are a two-year badge. We did implement some new software to help Cameron and Dylan and their teams with security and just processing these, so increasing those costs a little bit. We did keep the CIDA badges the same. Those are some annual badges, and they are a much higher cost. They have more involved, and we've increased those, so that is why it's just focused on AOA here. Since we did increase parking rates this year, we wanted to make sure we're also increasing those violations from parking fees. We don't get a lot of them, but we want to make sure it's not cheaper to pay a parking fine than it is to pay the parking rate. So trying to pay attention to those. And then we do have some stated staff billing rates. At times, airlines will ask staff to help do things. We turn around and bill them for our time, and just with increasing costs and rates, we've bumped up those, and those are dependent on level. So. Outside of that, we did have a modest increase in our lease transfer fee as well. So when tenants swap out, again, those get reviewed by legal. So that's the intent of that fee, is just to cover our cost for having Dan help with that processing. So overall, pretty minimal. We are looking at a few different surveys that have gone out and doing some benchmarking. We also have some contractual rates that will update April 1st with the rental cars. So there could be a couple of additional ones, but right now this is really establishing the only changes that we have in our rates this year that are not set by contract, if you will. The lease rates and all of those are contractually set. And I guess with that, I'll open it up to any questions. I'm sorry, that table is really small.
How long have we been at 35 for the AOA badges?
I think the AOA badges haven't changed since 2023. So a couple of those have been in 2 years ago, kind of a two-year cycle.
Do you ever get any pushback on these kind of changes?
I mean, we will here and there, especially with badging. I think that's just, you know, they are very low rates. And so I think as they do go up, we do get questions about it sometimes. But I think our intent is really to cover cost, not to make money on these types of things. And like I said, we've just had some significant increases in software. So not trying to generate a lot of revenue here, just cover our cost internally.
I'll also add that because of how we charge the airlines, because it's a cost, you know, I'm proud of the finance team. They're really thoughtful about kind of looking at the different costs and making sure that, you know, costs, this still won't fully cover the cost of issuing those AOA badges, but really trying to minimize those costs that airlines are paying for, where it really, it doesn't benefit them in any way. When we think about the AOA badges, those are used primarily by tenants and contractors to access the airfield. It's not the side of badges that the airlines use. And so it's really trying to make sure that we're just equitable in how we're allocating our costs as an airport.
Any other questions? I'll take a motion for action item B.
Move to approve resolution number 2025-08, establishing rates and charges effective January 1st, 2026.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Rust. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Action item C, resolution number 2025, to adopt the budget. Thank you for all of your work on this. Thank you all for being here in December on this busy month so we can adopt this. Sarah, go ahead.
Absolutely. So on the left in the bullets, I have just kind of a laid out timeline here of where we've been coming to this finalization. We did do that initial presentation to the Finance and Audit Committee in October, had a little bit more of an in-depth discussion from that. The public hearing with the full board on October 15th was sort of our formal notice to the public. We also published a notice of budget in the Daily Sentinel, which is required by the Colorado statutes. We did provide those rate tables to the airlines showing all of the calculations and how we got there. And then one of the things just to highlight, I have just kind of a snapshot here. The only changes that we really had from those initial presentations until now We use the forecast for 2025 to inform some of those 2026 revenue sources. We look at spend per passenger. So we did have a little bit of an increase in our non-airline revenue just from the trends that we're seeing, because we're kind of taking those averages from 2025 and applying it. So we had an increase of about $100,000 in that revenue line item, and then we had a little bit of a downward adjustment in compensation and benefits as we finalized some of the items with final positions and rates and those types of things. So a little bit of decrease in expenses, increase in income, so the net operating income increased by about $240,000 from our original presentation. And then we did have an increase in the total project cost this year, based on some conversations with the FAA and some of the grant applications that we plan to bring to you in January, as well as finalization of the solar project cost that we had approved with FCI. We put some of those actual numbers in there, so those project costs did increase a little bit, which increased the overall appropriations. But those were really those key changes that were made from the initial presentation.
Which were in our board packet.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there was any additional questions or clarifications on budget. Otherwise, I'll turn it back to you.
Commissioner West, I think that you sat on the committee.
Sat on the committee. We had some good meetings. I think we've got some good input and had a good place to approve the budget.
Thank you. Any other questions? Perfect. This is a roll call vote, so I need a motion and a second.
Madam Chair, I put forth to approve and adopt resolution number 2025-09 to adopt the 2026 budget and appropriate funds for 2026.
Thank you. May I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Kennedy. Toss up. All right. Any further discussion? Okay. Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Thank you. Commissioner Scheer?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Heinemann?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. The motion carries.
Just so you guys know, too, the agenda that we first posted on Friday, too, had the same agenda resolution number on there. We did update that prior to the meeting, but just in case any of you have the old version, they did both have the same number, but that hasn't been updated, and that was updated in the motion, just in case anyone noticed that.
Great, I did not catch that.
Because I don't know how many of us looked at it, but we still missed that number. So.
Thanks for catching that. But if you look at the bullet, it has 09 in the bullet.
Yes.
Thanks for catching that. Action item D, a delegation of authority. Thank you again for this red line as well. Sarah, are you going to take this item?
Sure, why not? Okay. with the red line, I think just calling out the key changes, again, really minimal changes here. This has really allowed us to clarify some of those powers that are reserved by the board and those that you have delegated to Angela to make just some of those day-to-day operating decisions. The majority of them this year were minor. We did have, obviously, the clerical change to change the name of the title, since Angela's title was updated this year. We did update a couple of references to other board policies. We had an old date for the procurement policies, which has been subsequently updated. The bring-your-own-device policy was absorbed within to the employee handbook, so that is no longer considered a standalone item. And the design and intent guidelines has been listed as one, but we went back through a couple of years of meetings, and that was not actually a board approved document, so just kind of trying to clean up some of those governance items and make sure that this is clean and accurate. We had a little bit of a clarification on grant amendments, just to really more for the staff and interpretation. It is not changing the intent. Angela's basically has the authority to approve amendments with our FAA AIP grants that would not have the airport's contribution exceed what she's allowed to approve in our purchasing policy. So that was very long-winded, but again, just some clarity on having a couple of different numbers in there. And then we also just wanted to add some clarification on standard form agreements. That had a very specific reference to approving aeronautical leases and standard form permits, but the board has also approved agreements such as a ground transportation operating permit. That wasn't called out. It really doesn't fit as an aeronautical activity. I believe the intent is for her to be able to approve those. So that's where we just wanted to clean up that language again, just to make sure that's clear that that is the intent. So pretty minor changes, but I didn't know if anyone had any other, questions or comments.
And for our new commissioners, I think this is something that we're just continually, the team and Dan or legal are just continually looking at and calling out just minor cleanup items so that it just is better and serves the airport better. So we'll see this usually once a year.
And it does have an expiration date included within it. We have, when we first put it out there, that is the intent to clarify these, but I think there was some concern when it was first adopted that it would live forever, so we do have an expiration date on it, and that is intentional, so that we will revisit it each year, and if not, it will expire.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Thanks for your time on that. Appreciate it very much. May I get a motion for resolution number 2025-10?
I move to adopt resolution number 2025-10, resolution of the Board of Commissioners regarding delegation of authority.
Second.
I don't think this is roll call.
This is
yes,
roll call.
It is. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any further discussion on this item? Okay. Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Shear?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Herman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Marshall is yes as well. The motion carries. Thank you. Wonderful. We have a lot of wonderful guests here, so I'm excited that we get to move into discussion today. Angela, can I have you do the introductions of our guests?
Yes.
Monroe and Davey Ling.
Yes. So here we have Davey Ling, who's the CDOT Aeronautics Division Director. And Scott Carey, who is with, I'm going to call it NREL, it's not called that anymore. So I have a brand new name that was acting as like Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
So I need him to say it out loud. So they are here today because they've been working for a couple of years now, actually, on a study looking at all of Colorado and electrification of aircraft in Colorado. This has obviously been a topic lately. Just really want our board to be familiar with and comfortable, you know, with the current understanding of what we can expect. And so they completed a study. It was funded by the CDOT Division of Aeronautics, and our airport was one of the airports they focused on. And so they're here to present those results and also just talk about this more generally and answer any questions.
Cool. Thanks, Angela. Thanks, Madam Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to come over and chat with you all. I'm excited about the air show. I was here for the last one. It was awesome. The Aeronautical Board that I report to is also excited about that. And Angela has graciously hosted our Aeronautics Board over here the week before. So our board will have an opportunity to attend in October. So we're excited about that. I'm excited because I hope you all know Angela was appointed by the governor last year to our state Aeronautical Board. She's one of my bosses. So I'm on display too. But she's fantastic. You know, our division works with 66 airports across the state, and I'm not just saying that because she's on our board and because I'm here with her, but Angela is arguably one of the most engaged and professional and spectacular airport directors we've worked with in the state. So y'all are lucky to have her. I'm lucky to have her, so we really appreciate that. But we're here today to talk a little bit about this effort that we undertook starting back in 2023. So myself as a division director in our aeronautics board, we've always been on the forefront of cool things in aviation. And right now, our industry is really kind of on the precipice of sort of the next generation of evolution of technology that I would say we probably haven't seen. So it's the evolution of jet aircraft in the late 1950s. You know, when those came into being, everybody had to rethink air traffic, noise, environment, airport infrastructure, fuel, navigation. Everything had to change. And that's really been kind of stagnant since then. But with this new generation of battery electric and hydrogen hybrid and turbine hybrid and all these cool new technologies that are being developed around the world, it's going to take a lot of work by airports and state agencies to work on incorporating these new technologies, which I'm very passionate about, are absolutely going to make air mobility more efficient, more accessible, and certainly more environmentally friendly. We're excited about that. You know, there's Colorado, there's only 12 airports right now that have scheduled airline service out of those 66. This new technology, I think, will have the opportunity to use our existing airport network to open up some new abilities for people to move. So we're here to talk a little bit about that. So I'm just going to make a couple of intros. We'll talk about this. So what we opted to do, this was pretty cool. We love doing stuff first here in our division in Colorado. We were the very first state aviation agency in the country to partner with, I'm still going to call you NREL. It's still fresh. I know. To partner with NREL to say, look, what does this mean for our airport infrastructure? What does it mean for us as a funding entity at state level? What do we need to be thinking about? What do you all as airports need to be thinking about? So we put together a scope of work with NREL that we funded using $400,000 of our division money that our board allocated. We started that in 2023 and we wrapped it up in early earlier this year. It's been a really cool thing. If you're interested in seeing the study, that's a QR code. You can download it from the NRO website. But what we really wanted to do is we wanted to see what is this next generation of regional air mobility. You also hear it called advanced air mobility. There's a lot of different terms out there sort of evolving. To take a look at what that means for us, I will tell you, we are very strategically not looking at electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft like the Joby aircraft in the bottom. Colorado's awesome. It's not really a state that lends itself to that technology at this moment in time because of the big mountain range that we flew over on the way here this morning. Those don't operate that high. They cannot crest a 14,000-foot mountain. So for us, what we really wanted to look at in Colorado is how do we leverage our existing Air Force for more conventional takeoff and landing airplanes like the Beta Alia that you see up at the top. We'll talk about that in a minute. So we also wanted to take a look at how larger airports like Denton, which of course they are a hub for all 12 of the other airports of the state to get service, what does that mean for them? So that's kind of a little genesis of how we came to be. It was really a fascinating thing because in that 2 years, the technology that existed at the start of the study was a lot different than the technology 2 years later. It's evolving that fast. A lot of the companies we talked about at the beginning are now no longer in business. Some of the new ones are here. So anyway, if we go to the next slide, we'll talk a little bit about some pretty cool news. This is really happening. Let me just scroll through those. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put any animation to those. But electric aircraft manufacturer Heart Aerospace moved their operations from Europe to the United States earlier this year. They're doing a 30 and I think a 76-seat hybrid hybrid battery hybrid electric aircraft that United Airlines has options for that will be used for regional air mobility. Recently, my counterparts in the state of Michigan, they teamed up with Beta Technology that again is developing the Alia aircraft in the lower left. That's a 5-seat battery electric aircraft that has a range up to 300 miles. Because it's not electric vertical takeoff, it can go a lot farther because it doesn't have to use all that energy to take off straight up and down. And you don't have to build new vertiports and all that stuff that goes with it. You can use an existing airport like it to host that kind of an aircraft. And then on the general aviation training front, you all are very blessed over here that you don't have some of the challenges that some of the airports down in Denver do with aircraft noise and flight training. There's a pilot shortage, flight schools are busy, people are really wound up about the increase in flight training activity at some of the airports down in Denver. Understandably, it's kind of disruptive. So there's a new generation of 2-seat battery electric general aviation training aircraft that will be more efficient, less expensive for the pilot. And we'll have the opportunity to lower the impact around airports like that. So we're very excited to look at those as well. This little Bristol aircraft, if you might go back real quick, the one on the lower right, that one actually came to Centennial Airport back in July for a demo. One of our board members got a ride in it. Just a couple of weeks ago, Centennial Airport Flight School, Centennial Flyers, just ordered 7 of those that they expect to start taking delivery on in early 2027. So we're now on the hook to help the airport figure out how to charge those things. So it's pretty cool. So that just maybe gives you a little bit of background about what we looked at. I'll turn it over to Scott to talk about the airports we looked at. We really wanted to make sure we looked statewide. So Angela was graciously able to help us out, and there's a lot of data we ask you all for. And so Scott will talk a little bit about what this might mean for you and things at the airport.
Now it's going to get geekier.
Now it's going to get geekier. Sorry.
Okay. So Scott Carey, I'm with the National Laboratory of the Rockies. We were renamed about a week and a half ago. It fits well with what we're actually doing. We were last renamed under, I think, first Bush to National Meteorology Laboratory. So this kind of gets to, we have to go out and we have to say, hey, we work on energy systems integration, we work on all kinds of power systems, we work on sustainable transportation. And they go, well, give us solar gas. Yeah. Like, well, we have to do a lot more of that. And so in this case, what we ended up doing was, does everyone know where NRL is? Okay, about 4,000 people, NLR, I just did it. About 4,000 people, when you come down Mount Vernon Canyon, crazy buildings on the south side of South Table Mountain. That's the main, that's the South Table Mountain campus. And then when you go up to Boulder and you see the wind turbines at the north end of Rocky Flats, that's our outdoor campus. Big power systems up to 20 megawatts can get tested. So those are the two main places. We also have a place up in Anchorage. Fairbanks. Okay, now getting into this. What we're looking at here, I just want to kind of set a stage of this discussion. Dave has done all that pre-work on the different size of aircraft and things that we started to look at here. where we went with this is one of the things we wanted to start early on is to start with the order of magnitude of loads. And right now, the majority of the energy that comes through the airport comes through the tanks sitting over here, comes through petroleum. And if you make a partial shift to aircraft that run on electricity, then you shift what is where the energy is flowing. It's not coming through the tank, it's coming through the wires. It's effectively what's happening. That will not get rid of your large aircraft, but it's a portion, right? So for this study, just as an example, we've got Durango and Grand Junction up on the side here. The orange bar is what Ben helped us with significantly to get power, roughly 500 kilowatts of peak demand at the airport for all of your existing buildings is what we gather from your meters, okay? Now you move over and say, I want to charge at 2 times the size of the battery. So I want to be able to charge a battery in a half hour to its full rate. That's a 2C charge rate, okay? To do that and to meet the forecast that was put together by a team of Georgia Tech, NASA, and high schools as well, you'd be up at 3.7 megawatts. So it dwarfs the building loads as that grows. Okay, so one of the things that we get into is, okay, that's a peak, that's not an average. So like you can get rid of your averages here right now with your tanks. So we get into the discussion of, okay, how do we work with those peaks of electricity? Because it's really hard to store. Okay, go to the next slide. Which one's next? Okay. Next one, Sarah, thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, so we start with flight schedules. So this was what we did with the state of Colorado was we leveraged what we've been doing with NASA and with FAA on these systems nationwide. And in this case, it was a NASA modeling effort that said, what would it look like if we didn't have to just do hub and spoke? So Denver, Junction, Salt Lake type of situations. But if there is demand, say, on the West Slope, use smaller aircraft to go direct in between those. So maybe you're going down to Telluride or Durango. Or when you look at this right here, what you see is you have Grand Junction starting. There's a 9-pack. It's coming in from Rocky Mountain Metro. And then what? It's departing to Montrose after that. That's the first line. So based on this specific forecast, then we said, okay, now this is how you can quantify the energy that we need for this system. We care about not just what it is over a day, but when. So then you can manage the size and the amount of infrastructure you have to purchase. Next slide. So in the case of Grand Junction, you were big on 9-seats, 9-seat aircraft. I believe it's because of the connections on the Western Slope. And smaller destinations, but more places that people would want to go. And then as you move up, you move into, say, a few 30 packs. So that kind of seems to line up fairly well with some of the connections over the Front Range, some of the historic air service. And so this was kind of the baseline for how we started to look at loads for essentially commercial service side of this. Okay, next slide. And then we went to flight schools. And in this case, what we did is we have a simulated aircraft. So we have to say, what is a reasonable estimate of an aircraft without picking one? Because a lot of them, there's like one that's been certified, and they're starting to grow. And so in this case, what we looked at was a 100 kilowatt hour flight trainer. So that's roughly a Cessna 182 size with a significant amount of range. The Bristol that was just up here, I believe it's gonna have a 50 kilowatt hour battery. Yeah. So how long can it be in the air based on the efficiency of the system, efficiency of the airframe itself. So we actually chased tail numbers with the help of Rocky Mountain Metro and Colorado Springs. So we saw how they physically flew, how they physically operated, and tied back into their schedules to say, now, here's what you actually did with your existing aircraft. And then we converted that based on that new model of aircraft with the efficiency that comes with it to come up with the amount of power that was needed. With that, then Grand Junction, we just said five aircraft because we didn't model Grand Junction specifically, but we scaled those others down to that. Thank you. Okay, EVSE is the chargers, is the electric vehicle. Now I can't remember. We've already talked about charge rates. So we've got 1C, 2C, and 4C. And what we're getting to here is, how long do you want to wait at the pump? is what it essentially comes down to. But there's degradation that comes with going faster speeds. There's also more infrastructure that comes with that. And so we looked at picking the right number of chargers to meet the requested schedules of the operators, is how we looked at this. And then said, based on these different rates, are we going to meet everyone's needs? I've done did this for multiple airports. Next slide. So for Grand Junction, for a regional airport building, the commercial service, you're seeing you have red that's in is 1C, green is 2C, and blue is 4C. So you see the blues are really high. And then you have a few places, and this is over 24 hours. You see you have a bank at around 7 in the morning, you have another one around lunchtime, some more in the afternoon, and then it tapers off towards midnight. And that seems to tie pretty well with your schedules. We got lucky it worked from the forecast. So with that, you start to see, why is there a big peak on green? That would mean there are multiple aircraft plugged in at the same time. There's overlap on schedules, is how that ends up coming in. And this is 53 forecasted flights in the Grand Junction in 24 hours. Next slide. When we go to flight schools, they're a lot lower. And that 100 kilowatt is not any bigger than a Tesla. It's half a Honda in terms of the amount of battery that's on that thing. Lot lower, set up in banks based on when people operate. This is a 7-day schedule for flight schools. Next slide. So where that goes to is you can pick and choose, and you can decide where you might want to go in terms of the amount of infrastructure you put in at any one time. So, okay, so the next question is, how do we provide the power as effectively and efficiently as we can? There's always a technical solution for these things. The question is it economical too? Because you are buying energy. And so not just that capital cost, you need to move past capital cost and think about the whole life cycle. It's not for the person in the building, it is for the cost of the energy at the end, right? And so we look at this, we call it the techno-economic analysis. And in this case, it was, okay, the request was to look at this to say, is there opportunity for airports right now to start to prepare for these types of aircraft, start to be able to say, hey, flight school wants to change. We're making some revenue right now, but we've also been able to invest in some of the infrastructure up front to make it easier for them to enter into service. I can run through all these numbers, but I'm not going to. I can answer questions anytime. Essentially, we look at a 25-year cycle, look at interest rates, we look at whether there's tax credits or no tax credits. We have a technology baseline we take care of for the federal government that looks at what technologies cost in a year. In this case, we use 2023. So, next slide. This is the fun part, okay? Utility rates matter very much. You all are in Xcel's territory primarily, along with Denver and Rocky Mountain. They have a rate for EV charging that is unique to the other rates that we see in the state, and actually very unique compared to New Mexico. With that, you can see that you get, basically depending on that rate structure, you're gonna get different answers. If you can negotiate a different rate structure with your utility, you may have a completely different solution here in terms of what makes sense in terms of what you may want to do yourself for generation versus what you're saying you take from the grid. That's how this ends up coming into play. For Xcel, they have started a rate called their primary EV rate. So the meter is primarily just for chargers. They don't charge you for peaks. Like, I assume that you're starting to get at home in the afternoons here, right? Okay, those demand charges in the afternoons. They don't charge that right now on EVs. Not sure why they're doing that. Could be to build capacity, could be other things. But what that means is it changes the technical solution you might want to consider if you're just thinking dollars. Next slide. This is welcome to what I get to interpret from all our great people that I get to work with. Okay.
Start with the acronyms.
Yeah. Okay. BAU, business as usual. we're just going to charge everything, all these new aircraft, straight from Excel. Then we go to direct purchase of energy assets. In this case, the cheapest assets that are available is solar and battery. Okay, and either you own it yourself or you go through basically a power purchase contract and you hire someone to install it on your site and they get a fee for that. And the key things, we'll go through this. We'll just focus on, if it's okay, I'm gonna lock up here for a second. This is where, through all of this, key thing. You start, let's just say we're doing 2C charge rates. And for business as usual, for the forecasted loads for the year, we're looking at $297,000 in electricity costs for all of those aircraft, okay? Now, that's business as usual. Now, if we start to look and say, okay, we can reduce the amount of energy that we have to request from Excel by doing some on-site generation, and we do a range of scenarios to try and find the cost optimal. And in this case, where we're going is it says, we want to do some generation, but because we have no demand charges, BESS means battery energy storage. No batteries are required. No batteries get you a lower cost. If you're worried about power safety shutoffs and you want to use that as part of your backup power system in addition to generators, that's a different topic. And there's a whole different way of looking at those things. But in this case for you, if you bought it yourself, there is not a reason based on the rates to do that. And if you do this, net present value is $280,000 and it's a initial rate of return of 8%. That changes if you say, I don't want to deal with it, I want to have somebody else own it, operate it, maintain it. You pay them for that, but you don't have to worry about it as much. And that's where third party comes in. And so you hand off some of that. This includes replacement of assets through the life cycle. So there's a few components that have like a 10-year replacement cycle in here. Any questions there?
Lots of questions.
Yeah.
I'm with Sydney Grange.
Yeah.
We've had some conversations around, let me back up. I'll start with my first question. Met with Excel and with their leadership this last year about significant challenges we face in the Grand Valley regarding our substations and feeders and power. Right, so obviously I know separating solar out, but making sure that we do have the right capacity to be, you know, pushing the megawatts that are going to be required here. That's a concern to me. And is that being addressed with Excel? It makes no sense to be talking about infrastructure unless we know we can, you know, provide the power.
It's another layer of what we work on. Okay. Yeah, that's probably the easiest way to say that. And you get into this discussion of if you're in a region that can generate significantly in that region, then there is the opportunity that there is less that has to come in that region. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right. If we could be generating the power local.
If there's more generation, so if you go up Valley, Holy Cross is starting to look at regional islands in some of their valleys. They're moving more generation into those valleys because they do have to deal with single lines over the ridge lines for wildfire.
Right.
So they've started moving that direction with some of those discussions. And so you can do some of those things yourself. You can say, hey, I'm going to aggregate my own assets to do it this way, or you can do that with the utility. And so this is just another piece of that.
Yeah, just the even with the little project we've done here with covering some parking with solar and this various solar projects the city's done, it concerns me the amount of solar that we would have to bring forward to even come close to touching something, a demand like this would be enormous.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like it would make more sense, like, well, let's fire up a natural gas power plant, right? Or something, to generate that type of energy, the megawatts.
So when you get to the kind of that discussion, you're going to get into the discussion of where is the cost optimum way to do it.
Yeah.
At that point, turbines work really well at larger scales. Okay. You have to get in the queue. Right now they're about 6 years out.
Okay, sure.
Especially with all the data center craze that's going on.
Yeah.
We're spending a lot of time on data centers too. Like, how much do you want? And when? You know, like, and then the utility goes, yeah, no, we're not there.
One other quick thing, this is a little bit of a selfish question, I'll quit up asking some questions here, but the battery storage intrigues me, that opportunity of pairing solar with battery storage. We had some conversations locally about redundancy within our own utility structures, like for our wastewater treatment plant or our water treatment plant, or, you know, maybe reach out to hospitals. What would make sense to say, maybe alongside of the generators you already have on site, but if you have solar, how could we get those batteries that are going to have the capacity to really sustain not only initial loads in addition to the longer term?
So you are hitting on what this tool right here, we did it this way for chargers. We have another module to that, we call it resilience planning. And we've been doing that with the Department of Defense for probably 10 years. And you say, okay, I've got a day tank of 8 hours. If I have an asset I'm making money off of every day that can cover a portion of that, and I have a battery, how many days can I extend my generator? Or if I do maintenance. A study last year we did with DOD, it was like an 80% fire rate on their generators, initially. Okay, and then within 3 days we were down to 30% potential reliability because they're backup generators. They're not intended for daily use and they're not running every day. Outside of AD, there might be better maintenance. There probably is, just from my own life experience with that. We're like, huh, nobody looked at that for a while. But that's just more data that goes into it. So there's a whole other layer, and we call it resilience planning. Here's your resilience plan.
Yeah.
So, and there's some good resources already done that can help with that.
Yeah. I'll follow up with you offline on this. But yeah, that battery issue is just that pinch point, right?
Yeah.
It's the weight in the aircraft that we're talking about. Yeah. It's that limiting factor.
Right. And so I mean, when you think about petroleum is really energy dense. And so when we talk about longer distance aircraft runs, if you start to get to where you're talking medium haul, long haul, international, the energy density is too good of that liquid. Whether it's made from dino juice or is a biofuel. It's a similar discussion. That's where you're going to
employ it. Well, and the efficiency of burning fuel, right? Your weights go down and your aircraft's are
yeah.
longer versus that battery staying the same weight.
Correct. But the flip side of that is that turbines run at like 40 or 45% versus an electric motor at night. So you have these trade offs that come in. So, and we're going to cover that a little bit more as we keep going.
Similar concerns. We've got meetings in my industry with Xcel. Need for some high load, some big loads, you know, on Western Colorado, and they don't have it available. They don't have it available for 8 years.
Yeah.
So that's a concern for me. And then currently that XL EV and EV charging is subsidized right now. Do you think that'll stay in effect? I mean, is that something you can count on for the long range?
I am not aware that the EV rate is subsidized. If it is,
that's my understanding. That's what I.
We basically look and say what rate is most likely to be used based on the rate structures that are available.
Right.
If people have different rate structures they want to use. Like if you look, Sarah, if you go back, if you look, so New Mexico does not have net metering as legislation, which means the generation you make can't go back out and be sold at the price you pay for it coming in. New Mexico, build as much as you can on your site in that situation and store as much as you can because you don't want to give anything back. What that does though, the more you generate on your site for yourself, your net load going back to your utility goes down, they have less they have to bring in for you. So there's this balance that happens there. It's, you know, it's distributed versus bulk power movements.
Is the Bristol Electric plane certified yet?
Is it, Dave?
It's a certified light store, correct?
So okay, yeah, so there, I know the gas was certified. I didn't know they had the electric one certified yet.
It's an LSA, yes.
Yeah, good.
Ready to keep going?
Yes,
sir. Okay. Okay, key takeaways. Key thing, we started to talk about this. moving generation closer to where you're using it, there could be some opportunities for existing airports, whether it's a land lease or revenue generation, while also bringing power to closer where you want it. The discussion on net metering policies, what tax credits are available, and I believe you guys have just been through all this with some of the work you guys have been doing in terms of timing of different items is important. That changes the numbers just like these other things do. Distribution system upgrades. Discussion of, okay, when you work with Xcel to get your new service, they may say, well, I don't necessarily believe that you are going to make your own power and you're going to curtail when you can't make your own power. So we're going to require you to upgrade the service into your site anyway. That's going to give you more resilience anyway. That doesn't mean it's a cost you're going to incur anyway, potentially. As always, it's the discussion. Start collaborating. You may have different with your utilities. You may have different goals, and as a utility and as an airport, they want to provide the service, but they might have slightly different goals than the airport does. Next slide. Okay, so this was, go ahead, next one. So we talked, this was primarily moving towards CDOT. Some key things just to know, an electric aircraft is on a per energy basis uses less electricity than a petroleum aircraft because the system is more efficient overall. From, you know, if you want to say from well to wake or whatever you want to do, it is more efficient to use it that way. The magnitudes of peak demands from RAM, flight school loads is much larger than the current building loads. And there may be some opportunities to make revenue or to help ensure that you can ride out some of the power system issues going on as we're going through this new cycle of growth in the utility industry. And realistically, you know, the question is, where are you on this cycle? The loads we talk about is a fully operational system, 50 aircraft a day. That's not going to happen right away. That's more like a 15-year type of horizon, most likely. So when we talk with friends like Beta, as an example, getting a charger out to all the locations so that you can link across the nation is a starting point. And the single charger isn't the question. It's when you want to say, okay, we're going to really run scale, and you need to plan it. Next slide. For CDOT and airport stakeholders, we also got into the discussion is, you know, what's happening with their flight schools? What do they want to do? The information is available, it's a choice, right? There's a potentially a higher upfront capital cost for the vehicles, but they might see a reason like noise that they're willing to say we're going to do a portion. CAE is doing that in Mesa, Arizona right now with 60% of their fleet, and they're working with Piper to do a type certification of their own existing airframes to transition this. Another item just to think about, a lot of the revenue on airports comes from fuel flowage and related to weight and fuel flowage. Or we're changing the weight of the aircraft, we're changing the efficiency of the aircraft, and we're changing whether it's coming out as a gallon or a kilowatt. So that thing goes to people like Mr. Ulane here to say, heads up, you might want to think about your revenue structures here. Just as for comparison, aircraft have increased in efficiency roughly 20%. In the last 15 to 20 years. So the increase in funds that have come into the AIP program is somewhat being stunted because the aircraft are being more efficient. It's being covered because of the increase in air traffic. Make sense? So more efficient, less revenue because it's by a gallon per gallon.
And I think for us, you know, as we wrap up, I think, you know, this wasn't designed to be a specific analysis of your electric needs at this airport or any other. We just wanted to get an idea of what we needed to be thinking about because this all continues to evolve and change. So please don't take any of this sale. This is exactly how many kilowatts we need. That's really not our intent. But the challenge I think we all have with this is this whole chicken and egg thing. It's like you want to put the right infrastructure in the right place and not waste money. and then have nobody fly to the airport because something else is they're going somewhere else. You know, this was not an air service market. We're not saying there's a market for air travel between Lightful and Grand Junction. But we just wanted to get everybody to start to think. So this is kind of a high-level effort. We have reached out to all of our airports and said, look, electric aircraft charging infrastructure on airport that is common use is eligible for our division's funding. We would love to start talking about some of that and how we do that. We've been talking with Beta, and we've been talking with Centennial Flyers, how we can support their charging needs. But we're excited about this. It's kind of cool, but we also want to be a little bit smart about where we invest our money and not put a charger somewhere where it's never going to be used, where meanwhile there's a need for a charger somewhere else, we go, now we have no more money to spend. So that's kind of our take. We're not quite sure what the next study effort will be. Again, the technology is incredibly dynamic. There's a lot of other things to think about. I'm a former airport guy too. Dylan's team, you know, aircraft rescue firefighting looks a lot different when you have an airplane with 7,000 or 8,000 pounds of lithium-ion batteries as opposed to 2,000 or 3,000 gallons of jet fuel. That means new aircraft firefighting equipment, new training, new things like that that are way bigger than what your local fire department will have for an EV fire. Again, things like revenue. Our division is funded 100% by fuel taxes. You know, when those airplanes start using different types of electricity, you're not allowed to submeter in Colorado under current PUC rules. So airport can't say we're just going to add 10 cents a kilowatt to everybody's meter. Can't do that here yet. So that's a policy change. The FAA is largely funded by federal fuel taxes. You've got to get flowage fees in your airport as well. So a lot of these other things we need to be kind of thinking about, and that's really what this study was designed to do. How to look at it. It's about 75 pages, I think, total. It's got a lot of great info in it. We can go back to that QR code if you missed that. But really good stuff, and we'd love to keep the dialogue going. If you all are hearing from electric aircraft folks that want to do something here, let's talk. We've got funding available for that. We'd love to collaborate with you and try to find a way to get them here. You know, none of these go here over the mountains right now. That's the struggle with these. You know, they're not pressurized. You know, they don't have the performance to get up high enough. So every time one of these eVTOL companies comes to us and says, we want to cover Colorado, I'm like, you guys must have been mad. It doesn't work that way. It might work in Florida or California. You know, we're really starting to have a lot of work. But again, the eVTOL stuff's very cool. I don't know how you recoup literally tens of billions of dollars of development costs with 4 seats per airplane. I don't know how you do that and make it affordable for the rank and file folks like us that are not independently wealthy, probably. So that's why we're focusing on the more regional airplanes. There are some very cool new ones too. Take a look, it's really cool. Scott and I were talking, there's a company developing a turbine powered electric hybrid that's got 76 seats that uses a turboprop engine that runs on traditional jet fuel for cruise, but on takeoff and landing would use electric, and then those just like a bolt hybrid.
Like a hybrid.
Hybrid. That kind of technology for the 76-seat airplane, they are pressurized. They do have the ability to go from here to Denver, from here to Salt Lake, or here to Phoenix. That's the kind of technology that I think you're going to kind of see that will require some charging, but will also still rely on traditional jet fuel. As Scott said, it's got a lot of energy density. So,
can I mention Utah? I know you're the
sure. They're better at everything at the state level. Let's see that hits Utah. But that's okay. Roads are better. Everything's better in Utah.
So, Junction is so close now in terms of access, right, into Utah. The state of Utah right now is working on a statewide corridor of chargers. I don't know if you guys heard this debate.
Okay. 15-4.
Yeah. Then I don't need this anymore. So essentially, you have, I look at it as now here on the West Slope before you get over the range, right? You guys are the next spot in terms of kind of connection points in the other states. He allowed us to look at Nebraska and Albuquerque and New Mexico and a little bit in Utah, even though it wasn't in the state, to make a network, right? Because there are some connection points.
Scott and Dave, thank you so, so much for coming to join us. I know my fellow commissioners probably have a bazillion questions. I'll say Lee does for sure. But in the interest of time, will you all be here for a few minutes after the board meeting?
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a filter. So we
know it's a lot.
So. We're so grateful. And I think, you know, your point is right. This is just beginning the education process because this is a long journey and just getting folks to get excited about changing policy. It's not simple. It's a complicated process. So. Thank you very much. Thank you, Angela, for your foresight to bring them here and continue to educate us on what's happening in the state.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, too, if I misled you to think that you were going to leave here with any answers. Because these guys know the most about this stuff of anyone I know. And every time I hear them talk about it, I'm like, I understand some of what you're saying. This is great. But really, I mean, I think we're all in the same boat. And that is, hey, we recognize that this seems to be a thing that's going to be a thing, which in our world, we're really, you know, we're skeptical. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money in aviation that ends up not going anywhere, right? And so, but this looks like it's going to be here, and it looks like Grand Junction will play an important role there, and that this could add a lot of value to our community, especially when it comes to connectivity. And so we want to be prepared, and so we're just trying to stay as informed as we can so that we can be as prepared as we can be, but recognizing that right now, you know, there's not a lot we can do to other than be educated to be ready to say yes.
Thank you both. We appreciate your time.
We appreciate your partnership. We couldn't have done it without the crew here giving us the data that supported that. Thank you.
Thanks, yeah, absolutely. And Dave, I'm not sure if you know of this fact, but here in Grand Junction / Mesa County, you know, our north-south roads, they're numbered in miles from the Utah border. Yeah. It's our warning system. So
very difficult to collect.
Same kind of mantra.
Yeah.
We used it as a warning system.
And I will say
32,000.
Yeah. No, that's why, you know, we had to relocate 27 and Porter Road.
Okay, thank you again. All right, we're going to move on to the 2026 officer and committee appointments. This is just a quick heads up that in January we will have those reappointments. So I've served as chair for just 1 year this last year. I'm happy to do it again if any of you don't want to step into it. Chris West has also served as the vice chair. But if any of you are interested, by all means, please let us know. Let's, you know, make a nomination. We just appreciate all of you volunteering your time on this board. It's meaningful work. And then the next item is our 2026 draft board meeting calendar, which I think you all saw in your packet. Yep. We appreciate just this proactive approach to our calendar. The only conflict that I saw that might be an issue is May 19th, which is like the last day-ish week of school. So if I, you know, I'm unable to be here, I trust that you all can hold the fort down.
So we tried to, in March, we deconflicted spring break, and you know what you saw in your packet was actually moving to the end of the month, and then within a few days, realized that we will have an air service conference that week that the airport really needs to attend, so we would propose that we actually move it to the second Tuesday in March, so before spring break, but wanted to bring that out. I think that's a good note on May. May is... I think Lindy's going to take it. May is busy as December, just to warn you. You know, that's something too where we're happy to kind of deconflict it with the end of school if that's helpful to the board. What are thoughts on that if we move to the second Tuesday, or does that create conflicts?
I'm the only one that has young kiddos, I think. Well, Dan too, but then.
Okay.
And I think if it would be helpful too, I think we can go ahead and send these out prior to adoption just to put holds on, and then if there's any changes between now and then, just because I know your calendars fill up. We didn't want to wait, but we didn't want to jump the gun too since we hadn't approved them. So
definitely helps when you have the hold out there.
Yes, it does. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. And then we'll be adopting this next month, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Go ahead and make that March change. It doesn't feel like a big deal to the rest of the board. Keep May the same, and I just probably will have to be absent, but not a big deal at all.
And I will call out to Victoria for October, our joint agency, just confirming with our partners at the city and the county. Tuesdays are difficult because of their meeting schedules. We had that on Tuesday last time and tried to kind of use our normal schedule, but we are going to keep that Thursday because that seemed to work pretty well for them. So that is the plan for right now, our joint agency.
Great. Thanks for getting that on the calendar, too. Okay, wonderful. Up next are our staff reports.
And we'll be brief because we know we don't have a lot of time.
Thank you.
Thanks. First, I just wanted to recognize a few of our teams for all their work. You know, we're at the end of the year, and I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful for this team we have and the board we have. Rest tremendous leadership and support to the airport. But you know, to finance, kudos for getting the budget to the finish line. Awesome job. And in the words of Commissioner Cody Davis, who's not here, airport budget is easy because things are in good shape. And I'm really proud of that. I also wanted to recognize our team, especially Cameron and Ben, All those projects that we had targets of getting done before Thanksgiving got done. I mean, the long list of things that were going to be done by Thanksgiving was, I was hopeful but skeptical that I'm not the only person, but everything got done and we remain on track at our new website launch, likely within the next week. I just wanted to recognize them. It was not easy. Lots of prep went into that, lots of work, lots of hand-holding, but the new signage is up, the ski lift chairs are up, you know, there's new furniture in the boarding area. I think we're all hearing about it in the community, and I just wanted to recognize those two in particular because we would not be here without their hard work and leadership. Next, the top complaint that we get about at the airport right now is actually about our curbside congestion. Like, that makes sense, right? Because as the airplanes have gotten larger, you think about that just means more cars on the curb. And so, you know, we've been working on ways to alleviate the congestion, and we intend to relocate the existing bus stop over to where long-term where employee parking goes. So public transportation tends to be especially important at airports as it relates to employees getting to and from work. And so we've been working with GBT and busing. You know, last night at the, I'm going to butcher the term, the GBT board meeting is what I'm going to call it, but it's not called the GBT, but the transportation committee for the region. You know, they discussed this at the board meeting last night, and that board was supportive of that change. We do not charge the public bus companies at all, but we do intend to make that change relatively quickly, just because we need more space curbside, and that is the primary, you know, between parking and then, you know, being dropped off at the airport. Those are the primary ways that our passengers get to the airport. We're going to make sure we continue to offer them all options to get to and from the airport, but we need to be responsive to our guest needs. So that is something we're working on. And so far, you know, things are going smoothly, and we're really excited to kind of activate that space. The location where we're proposing to be located is actually near Aviator Memorial Park, where we have the static displays. So it's on that side street there, so right across the street. So you'll be sitting there looking at those beautiful static aircraft, and it puts it in a much more central location at the airport because, as you all know, you know, Westar has over 600 employees. If they wanted to take the bus to work, they come on the complete wrong side of the terminal. So putting it in a more central spot where it's a short walk wherever they need to go, that's the plan. Make sure the full board knows about that. And then last, this one's really important, Santa will again be in the terminal this week to see where kids are going. We have Santa set up next to our big beautiful Christmas trees out here, so if anyone has friends or family who want to come see Santa, it's a big hit in the terminal. More adults take pictures with Santa than kids even, and so it's really spread Christmas cheer. We're confident Santa's sleigh has extra power from our Santa visit at the airport. So then I have just a few slides here. I'm kind of covering all the staff reports because we actually expect to be most of them now. But I do want to touch on a few air service things. So as we talked about last meeting, 2025 has been a great year. Certainly our busiest year ever. Expect will far exceed 600,000 passengers this year for the first time ever. And the first quarter of 2026, and actually as we look even further than that, looks very rosy. So it should be our busiest first quarter ever in terms of scheduled seats. So the most capacity we've had, we're really grateful to our partners for that. Next slide, please. And it's really driven by growth from American, Breeze, and United. And so that for me is the best part of all, is the growth is not concentrated in one single airline. When all the airlines are growing, that's what we really want to see, and it promotes you know, just having lots of options for passengers. So American, as the board knows, has been pretty tight with their capacity growth, especially in the winter months. We're happy to see them growing. I think Commissioner Kleinman might, you know, have tipped the scale here with his, like, just robust travel. So thank you. But, you know, we continue to see 2 to 3 flights per day to each of their hubs in Dallas and Phoenix, but we will see that switch to 3 much earlier this year than they did last year. January and February tend to be pretty weak travel months at our airport. There just isn't much leisure travel going on. It tends to be all business, so we're really happy to see that growth. Breeze is up. I mean, those numbers look gigantic. but it's because we're taking small numbers and looking at the percentage of growth. But Breeze, they're adding in a third flight during certain weeks, each to Vegas or Santa Ana. I don't think there are any weeks where we have three to each. But as you all know, they fly Thursday, Sunday to Orange County and to Las Vegas. And so this spring and late winter, we'll be seeing sometimes Tuesday flights to one of those destinations as well. So we're really happy to see them. Airlines don't grow in markets where they're struggling. They're not adding more flights. And so this is the ultimate sign of health. Next slide, please. I think this is what we're just talking about.
I was going to say something happened when I increased the other one.
And United continues to grow here. You know, they're growing the first quarter. It's mainly through upgauging aircraft. We'll see fewer CRJ-200s. Even when they do have 50 seats, they're putting in more CRJ-550s. But what I'm most excited about is they are now adding a seventh daily flight starting April 30th to provide passengers even more options through their hub in Denver. So we're very excited about that. The one airline who is not growing the first quarter is Delta. So as the board knows, they've been flying about 12 flights per week. So once to twice daily, they'll be flying just once daily at least for that first quarter period. But they've modified the flight time. So right now it's a very early morning departure. So they leave an aircraft here overnight and call it a remain overnight or a RON. That RON departure time has been before 6 a.m. Those departure times worked great pre-pandemic. Now they sound painful and they're a lot less popular. I guess all of us slept in or something during the pandemic. I don't know. But we realized that we don't want to like get up at 3 a.m. And so, no, I'm kidding. But they have adjusted that flight time to where the departure is in the 7 o'clock hour. And those flights tend to perform much better at our airport. And so we're excited about that change. So it'll that'll be the daily flight that we see is that morning departure. Again, it'll be a little bit later. And then that midday departure is what's been removed from the schedules. And just to kind of give you a snapshot of how January is looking now that it's right around the corner somehow, you know, our air service remains stable. We will continue to have an average of over 12 flights per day. You can see the mountain airports, kind of how what they're looking like. What you're not seeing is huge growth in those mountain airports. They're in a pretty stable spot. And what we see schedule-wise is we continue to see the schedule focus more and more on that leisure travel pattern, taking people into those mountain communities. And so, you know, Fridays are very busy coming in. Sunday, Monday departures are busy going out. There's very little activity Tuesday, Wednesday in those mountain airports. But this is what you see. Some of those destinations are only served for the holidays. So again, we talk about those dots on the map. We're so proud that our dots on the map are stable year-round and grateful for that. Some of their dots are like that, and some of them, you know, I think the fewest, I think there's one where it's only flown 8 times for the year. So, but those mountain communities, their service looks stable, so Western Colorado should have plenty of air service, so no need to drive it down Washington. this is my last slide. Oh, and then really quick on the projects. Thanks so much to the commissioners who came and looked at the boarding area. Those improvements are just about done. The signage is up. Hopefully you noticed it when you came in. If not, I encourage you to just, you know, kind of go through the main part of the terminal on your way out so you can see some of it. It really just makes the airport feel professional and grown up, to be totally honest. You know, we're a little airport, it's easy to navigate, but it's really easy to navigate if you're unfamiliar and you have a sign and you can see, wait, it really is just this easy. Yes. So really happy with the install. All the signage is done. The roundabout sign will happen in the first quarter. Ben and his team have been working on that. On your way out, take a look or a seat at the ski lift chairs. So as a reminder, those are chairs from a historic lift up at Aspen Snowmass. And I may have made a call to Ben Heck when that auction opened and told them that we really need to get a few of those to put on display out in front of the terminal. We are working with Aspen Snowmass to have a plaque there to really talk about them and just give people a sense of place. I mean, the vision again is to get to sit there, look at the Red Rocks of Colorado National Monument, while all of a sudden realizing, wait, Aspen's nearby too? Where am I? And, you know, really just give people a sense of place. And for those people who are using the airport to get to somewhere else and not stay in Grand Junction, Again, we just want them to wish they were and plan a trip here next time instead. So really proud of all the improvements, so grateful to the team for all their work, and I'm grateful to the board for all of your leadership and support this past year. Thank you so much.
Yeah, record breaking.
Yes.
In a big year.
So thanks so much for that, Ovid. It, I mean, people really get sick of listening to me talk, so thank you so much for talking on behalf of the airport, and way better than I could. So
it seemed like a good time to bring, to highlight all that.
Oh, it's so nice, and thanks for taking a moment to actually do that. That's not my strength. I just want to keep going.
Keep going.
We'll stop and celebrate all those little milestone wins. Absolutely. Thank you. Great news. Great report. Great way to end the year. Truly, it's a really exciting way to end the year. Do we have any other business to come up for the board? Sarah, do you have anything for your report?
I didn't prepare a report, just kind of thinking about timing, but if anybody has questions on financials, I'm happy to take them, or you can reach out to me individually as well.
Okay, everyone. Thank you all. Thanks to the team. Thanks for joining us today. Following great questions. We hope everyone has a wonderful holiday season, and we'll see you back here in January.
Motion to adjourn.
Yes, we do need a motion.
So moved.
Sorry. Wonderful. All those in favor?
Aye.
Perfect. Now, we'll see you back here.
1 o'clock.
And if you haven't yet, make sure you order some airport swag. If you have any issues or have any trouble or just don't want to click all the buttons, we just want to tell Victoria's Airport.
Got it.
That's so fun when we get to sit. Thank you all.